Hello, guys. This is Willie Fletcher here again with the Op Lab podcast, and super excited again today to have my good friend Kevin Ballinger with us today. Kevin helps me as a coach here at Alliance Champions, but also has his own karate school adjacent to our facility here on Haywood Road in Hurricane Martial Arts. And I've known Kevin for a few years. Got to be good friends, training partners, and he originally, I think, came to me working, doing a little bit of jiu-jitsu with us, kind of, you know, stepping out of his comfort zone in the stand-up arts to do a little grappling with us, and then later came when we were doing CrossFit, but, you know, joined us for that, and we had a few adventures along the way, yep. But super excited to have him here today. We always have some interesting conversations, so I thought this would be a fun podcast to do, kind of talking about, you know, some of our experiences here at the gym, but also, you know, our kind of common, you know, journey through martial arts and other stuff. But I want to let Kevin kind of tell a little bit about his story and maybe how we met, and also how he got into, you know, martial arts and to eventually become a sensei and have his own school. So welcome, Kevin. Glad to have you here today. Yeah. And
thank you very much. Yeah, glad to be here. Super excited. I got some big shoes to fill. I've listened to your podcast, man. You've had some really good ones. I just listened to Russell's podcast the other day, man. That was a really good one. But glad. Thank you for having me. And just you know, we'll see where this goes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit, Kevin. You know, I know a little bit about your story and really how you got into martial arts. But if you don't mind, just you know, tell us a little bit of your background and what led you down that road and. You know, even if you want to get into a little bit, or we can get into it later, kind of like some of your, I know we've talked about this on many occasions, and we have some common, you know, even though we were involved in a different martial art, you know, my primary thing is jiu-jitsu and yours is karate, but some similarities there, and even kind of some of your vision for your school and kind of how all that integrates into what we've been doing together as well.
Sure, absolutely. I started karate and martial arts with Kevin Hudson, Hurricane Martial Arts, in 97. I just gotten out of, just graduated college. I went to the University of Georgia. And I always wanted to do martial arts growing up as a kid. You know, you watch the kung fu movies and stuff. And, you know, I think every little kid pretends he's a ninja in the backyard and stuff. And so I always wanted to do it. And growing up on a little farm, and you know, dad, you know, my mom and dad, mom stayed home with us, me and my brother, and you know, dad worked all the time, and so just wasn't a lot of no time, you know, and to do any of that stuff. And so anyway, a lady I worked with, her daughter was a student, and she goes, well, they have karate classes for adults, and so that's how I got started in karate. I started at 27 years old, went and did my first class. And fell in love with it, and so in karate, you know, it takes around 3 years to get your first degree black belt, and so got my black belt, and then like most people, when they get their black belt, they achieve that goal and they stop. And so I was like most people, I didn't realize that getting a black belt in karate is like getting your driver's license. You don't know what you're doing at that point. You know, you just get you got your license to practice. And so I didn't understand that. And plus I had, you know, life was going on. I was a young guy, you know, and different stuff happening in personal life. So anyway, I stopped for almost 6 years, at least six. And so, and I always missed it. You know, it was one of the things, you know, I'd go through life and I might not think about karate for, you know, months, you know, goes by and not think about it. And I'd have this, you know, I started missing it. And like everything else, you know, you've heard it before. It's like, you know, especially like former clients, they might go, well, I'll get in shape, then I'll come back and get in shape. And so I was a little out of shape, you know. I was out drinking beer a lot, you know, and doing the bar scene. Downtown Greenville was just getting busy in the early 2000s. And so that was the first, you know, I'd have that feeling of wanting to go back. And then the excuses would start. And the first excuse was, you're not in shape. I bet I was, and I've shown you that picture of me, I bet I was 260, 270, you know, and so that was the first excuse, I'll get in shape, and then I wasn't flexible anymore, I couldn't touch my toes again, and so that was the second excuse, and so you'd start listening to those excuses, and the feeling would leave you, that, you know, and then 6 months, 8 months go by, and you would repeat that process. And it was always that way, you know, making excuses of why I wouldn't go back. And I'll never forget, I was working over in the Miravan Center. You probably had, you had a gym over there.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
You're probably over there. Yep. It was probably Billy's Jedi. You didn't even know it. And so, but I was on break. I was in my car, and I had that feeling again of wanting to go back. And the excuses started to pop up. And it was the first time, it was like somebody was in the back seat with me. And I heard this little voice, and it was something, you know, like, stop making excuses, pick up your phone and call the karate school. It was that crisp and clear of a voice, but it was a whisper. And I remember picking up my cell phone. I had one of those little flip razor phones, and, you know, I hadn't called that karate school in 6 years, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. And there was no reason in the world why Kevin Hudson should be at the karate school, but I dialed I remember the phone number. I just dialed it, 879-7916. And so, number one, I remember the phone number. Number two, he picked up the phone. Okay, and so I was like, hey, you remember me? He said, yeah, man, how you doing? So we chatted for a minute. So I'm coming, I want to come to class tonight. And so he told me what time the class was. And so I drove home, and, you know, and you're still kind of a little, nervous because you made the commitment, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, don't sit down. I had to find my uniform. You know, and so I had to dig out through, tear everything out of the closet, get the uniform, and went over there. Couldn't remember how to tie my belt, and so all that stuff. Anyway, and so, you know, I started back, and so, and then maybe 6 months later, him and his brother were going to open up a new school over in Greenville, and they came to me and asked me if I wanted to, they thought I'd be a good karate teacher, and asked me if I wanted to run the school for them. And, you know, I'd never done anything like that, never taught anything, you know. And so, but, you know, I was single, and I was like, you know, it's like, man, you know, if I didn't like it, I could always quit and go do something else. And so that led me to, you know, accepting that position with them, and we opened the karate school, and I got to work with his brother, Kevin's brother, Shannon Hudson, who's the CEO of Nine Round, and which was really a good opportunity. Shannon, they're both really good at karate teachers, but, you know, Shannon was really good with the kids, and I got to learn how to work with young people. And I also got to learn how to, you know, run a business from him. And, of course, you know, he's very successful with Nine Rounds. So I was very fortunate in that route. And then I bought the karate school from him. And so he wanted to do Nine Round, and so he gave me the opportunity to buy the karate school. So I purchased it from him. And that's kind of how... You know, I guess I kind of think back, how long has that been? So it's been a while. We opened the karate school in 2007, and I bought it like a year or two later. So, you know, now here it is 2020.
Yeah, wow.
And so,
yeah.
There that is, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's something I didn't know. I knew you when we've taught you. Yeah, you started. You were out of karate for a while before you went back, but I didn't realize it had been that long.
Sure, it's been a while.
And you know, I was just having a conversation with one of our clients before we stepped in here to do the podcast, and you know, one of the things we're talking about is you know, like sharing stories, and sometimes you know, you get on these, you know, podcasts sometimes, and you always got these subject matter experts, so to speak. You know, we're just talking about Ben Greenfield and Mark Devine and stuff like that. And sometimes I think people don't always connect with that, you know.
Right.
Because that's Mark Devine, you know, he's a Navy SEAL commander, you know, he's owned all these businesses, super successful and all that. Not that you're not successful, but I think that's pretty cool that you, you know, because I think we see that all the time. In jiu-jitsu, it typically takes longer to get to the black belt. So, so when, you know, when we... You know, even at each belt level, we'll kind of go through, and when people get promoted, they have an opportunity to kind of, you know, tell a little bit of their story. And it's always, that's one of the, you know, most interesting or fun parts for me to hear people's kind of story of where they got, even when from white to blue. But by the time you get to black belt, they've all got a story.
Sure.
And very few of them have been able to go from white to black without somewhere in there they had to take some time off.
Right.
And, you know, but 6 years is a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a key thing. I think really where I first, and I know, you know, we've both done some work with Tom Shea, but that's one of the things that we kind of, one of the lessons I think from the 24-hour walk training and that, you know, doing that adventure, was that stopping's not quitting.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a huge thing, because like mm-hmm. being out for 6 years and coming back, now you're actually, you know, you have your own school, sure. you're an instructor, you're teaching others.
Right.
So I think that's a great, great story for people to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe been out, not just martial arts, but anything, they may have, you know, they enjoyed something, they were out of it for a while, I'm like, you know, and they mm-hmm. we all have those voices, right?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, of getting back or whatever, and, you know, sometimes you just got to tell those voices to shut up.
You do. You're right. You know, and, you know, you think back, you know, if I hadn't stopped the first time and experienced life those 6 years, and you know, the life experiences and things that you went through those 6 years brings you to the place where you're ready to listen to what's going to happen. You know, when I was younger, man, you know, I can't do the math on how old I was, but you know, early 20s, man, I don't know that I would have been ready to be a teacher, you know, at that time. And so, you know, me and my wife, you know, Carrie, you know, we talk about sometimes people get hung up on, you know, what I want to be a college graduate at 22, and I want to be married at 23, and I want to start having children at 25, and I want to do this, and you know, they set an age limit or whatever, you know, on where they want to be in life. And you know, I mean, I bought my business late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I stepped out of my comfort zone and bought a business when I was, you know, in my late 30s.
Yeah.
You know, I became a karate teacher like 35. You know, I stopped doing my, you know, left the corporate world, I guess, you know, and became a karate teacher at 35. And you know, and so you got to be willing to just let, you can't be afraid to not take chances, but you got to be willing to let life lead you where you need to be. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like she's got, you know, like my wife, you know, she's got two, she went back to school in her 30s.
Yeah.
You know, got her bachelor's and got her master's degree. Yep. You know, at 30, and I got married for the first time at 46. Like, and so, you know, not 22. You know, and so, you know,
yep.
So yeah, you just got to be willing to listen to the voices and when it, don't be afraid to act when it becomes your time.
Yep.
So.
So I'm gonna take off on a tangent, because something you brought to mind, well, two things. I'll try to remember the other one, but you were talking about that voice.
Mm-hmm.
I know we both you know, study the Unbeatable Mind program, Mark Divine's program. I've heard you talk about it quite a bit. You know, some of the meditation practice and things of breath work and all of that. But one of the things Mark talks quite a bit about, he uses the term witness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, that kind of reminded me of that. You know,
sure.
It's like, but you have to have I guess, your mind in the right place, so mm-hmm. to speak, to be able to hear that.
Right.
Because if you're, you know, if you're always going and you never have any quiet time or anything like that,
right.
sometimes that voice can be there, but you're not hearing it because mm-hmm. you're not receptive to it. You're almost
sure.
like, I think sometimes, you know, I mean, again, just my perspective, I think sometimes we stay busy.
Sure.
We keep busy so we don't have to listen to that.
Right.
You know, and if you don't take that time for mm-hmm. silence or time for, you know, contemplation or
right.
meditation, whatever you want to call it, you know, and then that witness can be, you know, that's the term he uses, but, you know, that can take on many different connotations of what that voice actually is.
Sure.
But I, you know, I think it is a, you know, it's something that's there for all of us, you know, again, whether you know, like you said, whether you listen to it and take action.
Right, that's right, exactly.
Is another key.
You know, yeah, you know, and this is all before I learned any of that
yep,
stuff, you
yep.
know, and so I wasn't purposely, you know, meditating or
yep.
trying to hear anything, but I had, you know, I was sitting in my car with, you know, just sitting there, you know, trying, you know, at break time, you have like 10 or 15 minutes, you know, to sit, to do whatever you want. So I just stepped out of my car and just closed my eyes, you know, yep. it was quiet, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you hear that voice, you know. And, yeah, it was probably just luck that I, you know, I was sitting there being quiet, you know, but, you know, today, you know, it's hard for even adults, anybody to sit and quiet.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, we've talked about the meditation and stuff, and I look forward, that's something I enjoy, is to sit in quietness and just, you know, and just concentrate on my breathing. And, you know, sometimes I just breathe, you know, just normal, just no practice, no exercise. Like box breathing is an exercise, especially if you get up to the higher counts. But sometimes I just, you know, just sit and it's just quiet. Yep. And I enjoy that. I look forward to, you know, like you said, in the sauna by yourself and just be quiet. Mm-hmm. And today, you know, with those phones in our pockets, man, they engineered it, you know, so that we would look at it every,
right.
That's
right.
Why I turned my phone upside down so I don't have any notifications coming around, you know, when the screen lights up. And so our attention span has gotten way shorter. We talked about that before too, you know, so it's hard for people to sit and be quiet. We want to be entertained.
Well, one of the other things I use quite a bit now, but I actually, you're the one that put this in my head, was you told me when we first, again, we had met, you had done some jiu-jitsu classes first.
Back up on, when it's a Pendleton Street, I guess where Max is at now, Max Beach Shop.
Mm-hmm. And you and Kevin Hudson came over and did some training with us. And then later, I think Larry recruited you. From Nine Rounds.
Well, I'll tell you how I came to CrossFit. You know, so my training up to that point, you know, was mainly martial arts. I would go lift weights occasionally, you know, with what was it, Fitness 19 or something over on Woodruff Road area. Could we get, you know, and so, you know, and then Nine Round, of course, you know, bag work and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, but that was probably 2007-8ish, somewhere in there, and the CrossFit Games were on.
Okay.
You know, ESPN was putting the CrossFit Games on to kind of filler space, you know, and their programming and stuff. And so, you know, sit at home watching these guys do, you know, crazy stupid stuff, you know. and I was like, I was watching these guys do handstand push-ups.
Okay.
And you know, a handstand push-up is basically an overhead press. Okay. You just with a bar, you know, so it's upside down. And I'm like, you know, my first reaction was that would be a 220 pound overhead press.
Right, right.
And then I was like, those guys must be little. they must be like little gymnast guys, you know, 140 pounds. And so, and I watched them all do their stuff, you know, and, you know, it looked fun. You know, it looked like it was fun. I knew you had the CrossFit gym, you know, in the jiu-jitsu school. So I called you, I got, you know, and I met you and come to do my first little, which you just did the workout again, the 500 meter, the baseline workout. Yeah. It like killed me. And I never forget, you know, I told you that. I said, man, I can't do a handstand push-up. And, you know, it's the great thing. Everybody knows Billy, man, knows that you get that little grin. And you went, you know, you will. You'll be able to do one before long. And I think next week you program, and I couldn't even kick myself up against the wall. It was awful. But, you know, that's how I came.
Okay.
Larry came and did a nine-round workout. Okay. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think our first partner workout, she was your partner.
Yes. And I was like, yeah, she killed me. I couldn't keep up. And so, which is, you know, we talked about this too. You know, you get people who are athletes, or, you know, they come from another fitness regimen. You have to get their attention. Mm-hmm. If you make it too easy on them, they don't. It's not a challenge, you know. Yeah. And if it had been easy, then I'd have been the same way. I'd be like, you know. Yeah. And but it wasn't, man. It was hard, you know. There was that one. It was the hill sprints. I forget. It was some kettlebell swings and some push-ups and some. I never forget. I said I'll get done with my little thing and I'll get the rest while she's running. And I looked up and she was waiting on me. And I was like, hi, mighty. And so that was awful. And then the first CrossFit, official, I guess, CrossFit workout, we did Fight Gone Bad.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Kenny, you remember Kenny?
Yeah.
You know, I think he was my partner.
Okay.
And it was, you know, and this was even modified even better because, you know, one person did all five exercises, then you got to rest the whole 5 minutes, not 1 minute like you're supposed to. And I couldn't make it through. I think I made it through a round and a half. And I had to go sit in the jiu-jitsu mat, and it took me like an hour to recover. And I was like, gosh, you know, but me, I was like, I'm not going to quit.
Yep.
You know, I'm not quitting, you know, because this is hard.
Yep.
And so, and the rest is, you know, same thing with the, you were training for Kokora.
Yep.
And I forget, it's like, you know, y'all asked me to come train with you guys on Saturday morning. I was like, you're out of your mind. you know. But the more I looked, and the more I watched, you know, you and Edmund, and you had, some guys training with you, the more I watched it, the more, it was the camaraderie, really. Yep. It was, you know, the, you guys over there working together as a team. It was hard, you know, but you were working as a team, and you not let, you know, and that resonated with me a little bit. And, you know, then I showed up, started coming to the Seal Fit workouts on Saturday morning.
Yep.
And I guess 10 years later, here we are.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that word you told me was, and it's really kind of made me try to be more aware of, because it can work both ways, but you said, like, I don't recall that conversation about the handstand push-ups. You told me about that.
Sure.
But you said I planted a seed in your mind.
Sure.
You know, that it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something I have tried to be more aware of, especially, you know, I would say even in the last year is, you know, because you can plant those seeds for good, but you can also plant those seeds for bad. Like,
sure.
You don't want to deter.
Right.
Like, I'm careful. I even had this conversation with my son, I think, last week or week before last. It's like, you know, as parents, I think sometimes we, you know, I'd say probably not sometimes, probably almost all the time, you want to protect,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, you know, he got into boxing a little bit last year, and I didn't deter him from boxing, but when he's talking about wanting to compete, you know, I'm like, part of me is like, well, you know, go talk to Kevin Hudson about that first.
Yeah, exactly.
See what he thinks. But you know, it's you know, because there is a risk.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
and but at the same time, I don't want to plant that negative seed,
mm-hmm.
you know, either. So it's kind of that finding that balance. So it can work. Sometimes you might say something not meaning to discourage someone, and you do, but you know, like in your case, you know, obviously I was encouraging you, but I don't, you know, for you to tell me the impact that had,
mm-hmm.
that's huge, because I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes it can just be one word,
mm-hmm.
you
yeah,
know, that can
exactly.
send somebody down, you know, down a path. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we kind of got off a little, you talked about a little bit with the Seal Fit stuff, and that's, we even talked about this last week. It's like, you know, talking about the future a little bit, and I remember, when I read about, I read about Seal Fit, and, you know, way back, again, when we were, you know, part of CrossFit, they used to have a CrossFit journal that you had to print out, you know, each month it was like a PDF or something. You printed out the whole thing and read it, and there was an article in there. I'm not even sure Mark wrote it, but it was basically talking about Seal Fit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, these guys were carrying logs and on the beach and doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, that'd be pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, there's no way I'd get people to do that.
yeah.
And then that's kind of where it started when I, mm-hmm. when I, you know, went out and met Mark originally. Looking back, it was actually, I think back then it was called the Five Mountain Training, which is really now, I think, like Kokura Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
That was my soft entry into the,
right.
you know, so it was,
yeah.
you know, I'm going to get killed during that.
Yes.
That was hard too, but different kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided, you know, same thing, like I was kind of testing the waters, and then that thing in my head kept saying, this is something, you know, it resonated with me, and you know, go give this a shot. And, you know, and then, and I remember reaching out. I think I reached out to Mark after that, and I think the question was, and I say this actually, I don't really erase many emails, it drives my wife crazy, but I think I saved, I probably could still find it, but I remember sending him an email back then, you know, I mean, I could actually email Mark, and
right.
he'd be the one that
right.
would respond, because
yeah.
he can't do that now. It's
no.
too much. He's got some other people doing that. But I said, you know, this whole idea resonates with me. You know, doing Kokura, it's about the warrior spirit and all that. But one of my concerns is, and this is before I had my hip surgery,
mm-hmm.
And my mobility still, I'm working on it every day, but
mm-hmm.
Was even a bigger issue back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, I don't want to get out there and just not physically be able to do something.
Sure.
And it's like he read my mind. He came back with, well, he's like, ideally you would have the mobility, but, you know, it's really not about that. It's
no.
about this warrior spirit.
Warrior spirit, right?
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And so after that, I signed up for it. And then, you know, and guys really, like the guys you're talking about, like Edmund, and then Dr. Rob back then,
mm-hmm.
and Joey, and then Rich Constantine was
mm-hmm.
working out with us then. So, you know, that I think that group really, we started, say, hey, we'll support you. We'll come on Saturday and we'll do the workout together. I'm like, great, because there's some hard workouts to do by yourself.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it started. Then we did a little bit during the week, and then we kind of got a bigger group going on
mm-hmm.
that. And then I came back from that experience, one of the best things I ever did. And then I guess it was because I had the hip surgery, so it was probably, because I remember I had to make sure I could run again. So it was right. At least a year after that. They started doing this 20X with me. Mm-hmm. And we were able to do that here in Greenville.
Yep.
I think we had 13 of us. Mm-hmm. And I think all but like two were from our gym.
Sure, yep.
And that was another great experience. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you were part of that.
Yep.
And I always remember, I remember a lot about it, but one of the things I thank Kevin for is he remembered the Invictus. Word by word, because that's what got us out of there eventually.
Yes.
Yeah. 13 plus hours
or whatever. Holding logs up, man. We'll go back to the lake, go back to the river, man. It's like, holly, man. That was fun. I say fun. It wasn't fun at the time, but it's definitely because we still talk about it.
Yep.
I know me and you to this day don't put our hands on our hips.
Yep. And Cynthia.
Cynthia won't either. Yeah. So I think Edmund does just out of spite.
My wife does.
And your wife out of spite too. And so I still talk about it. I tell my students about the experience that when the shit hits the fan. And it hit the fan pretty quick.
Yep.
We did our warm up. We did our little PT test thing, and then Coach Smith, Coach Chris, Smith, he looked at us and he goes, the disease in the gym was the hands on the hips, and he said, Billy Fletcher, you got a disease, and it's that posture right there. And there's like half of us had our hands on our hips, and he goes, I'm gonna breed that shit out of y'all today. And we're like, oh God! And then we started chasing him through Nickeltown, doing sprints up and down those hills. And I mean, I never forget, man. You got every time we stopped, he's telling us to do something, and it's chaos, complete chaos.
Yep.
And even if it wasn't, nothing's gonna be right.
Yep.
We're gonna mess up, but it's complete chaos. We're standing in the road, trying not to get run over, some car, Saturday morning. And I remember one time, Cynthia and Big Sam are in the ditch doing burpees on top of the sticks.
Yep.
They had their sticks piled up for the people to come by and pick up, take off. And he put them on top of the pile of sticks to do burpees because they put their hands on their hips. And then a little bit later, man, the whole group messed up and he had us put our hands in our pockets and do no-handed burpees.
Yep.
And I have to explain that every now and then, what no-handed burpees are, because people don't believe me. It's like, no, man, we had to put our hands in our pockets to do burpees. We was in somebody's front yard.
Yep.
And I looked over, and there was the people who owned the house were sitting on the front porch drinking coffee, watching us. and then you had to do barrel rolls up the hill.
Yep.
Because you had your hands on your hips.
Yep.
Man,
Rob and I.
Rob, you and Rob had to roll up a hill.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna tell him that was the easiest part of the whole day.
Because you're used to doing the rolling around here. Yeah. But after the chaos, they calmed, we got to do, team building stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the out behind the gym, we had to, they got the, man, we had some gas cans and some logs, and not big logs, but like PVC pipes or stuff, just a bunch of stuff. And we had like teams. It was like three, I think it was three teams, and we had to like do a relay race. We had to take everything down to one side, and we had to stack it up. We couldn't just throw it down. We had to stack it up, and everything had to touch, they gave us parameters. And, the losing team had to do burpees. And, and it got to be, then it got to where, said it had to do 100 burpees. The losing team had to do 100 burpees. And then what we realized is that, we thought we got to rest, and we could be selfish and rest, or we could help them do their burpees.
Yep.
And so then we started, it's like, okay, let's help our team out, and even though they weren't really our, that team, that little team lost, they were part of the big team. And so, I learned a lot, my thing is when I work out, most of your workouts are, less than an hour,
mm-hmm.
And this was 13 hours.
Yeah.
And what I, the big, I ate lunch. This is really the only food I had. I ate breakfast before I got there, and I ate lunch that day. And it was, I learned that I kind of, when you're doing something like that, you got to make sure you're putting calories in your body hourly. And so I learned that. So when we did the 24-hour walk, I made sure that I ate, even though it wasn't nearly as strenuous. Just walking it and it's nearly as strenuous as the 20X, you're still burning through calories. you know, and so I learned how to fuel my body in a long endurance type of thing, mm-hmm. and make sure you're eating, you know, 200 or 300 calories an hour. And so that was good. And it was also good to meet Chris after the fact. You know, he came back about, I don't know, maybe 6 months later. Not even 6 months. He came back before Christmas, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was like Thanksgiving.
He came back and worked out with us. And so he was the mean one. Coach Chris was the mean one, and Coach McLeod was a nice one. And it was nice to be able to meet Coach Chris and get the other side.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
So he's super, super nice, yep. you know, and it was fun. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, I think those events are good. I mean, they're, you know, I like to call them crucible events.
Sure.
Or, you know, some people might call it immersion, too. So mm-hmm. it's because I think, you know, you can learn things over time,
mm-hmm.
you know, with, like, consistent, you know, frequent practice or whatever. And then sometimes you can learn things in a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, if the you know, under more intense circumstances. So, you know, so a couple of things from that, you know, we talk about all the time, we kind of joke about the hands on the hip thing, but it really, yeah, I think I even wrote an article, I think even Brad, I sent it to Brad, I think he even put it on his, you know, his blog one time or something, but it was the idea that when you really think about that, forget about that, the hands on the hips, but that's a habit
yes.
that most of us had had for years,
mm-hmm.
you know, just when you're tired, whatever you put your, or just when yeah. you're just standing there,
sure, yeah.
you know.
Yeah. And as then, a martial artist, that's where your belt's at.
That's where your belt's
at. And when you're standing around, and that's where, you know, as a teacher, too, you know, that's where my hands went.
Yep.
I put, you know, and I'm a big guy, you know, and so that was kind of my MO. Sure
you're almost like a power pose.
Power pose, yeah, right. And yeah. so, man, that was, yeah. that was, and so to this day, man, I don't put my, yeah. even when I got my belt on.
But it's, but you know, that's what I'm saying, like a habit you've had for maybe 20 years,
sure.
you know. In one day, you changed it, and you changed it permanently.
Permanently,
you know. And so I say, you know, a lot of times if the why and the motivation is great enough, you
sure.
can change anything.
Change anything, right?
And
yeah.
it shows you the power of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the other thing you mentioned, which I think is so relevant, you know, we're doing a workshop this Saturday. You know, it was kind of open to the public or whatever, but it's you know, mindset and resiliency and becoming anti-fragile, and so. You know, you look at like, and especially, I mean, there's always chaos on some level.
Sure.
But more recently with
there's
the COVID thing and all that, there's just mm-hmm. tremendous chaos. And so, and, you know, and to me, I'm always fascinated by the mental aspect of things. But if you, you know, you take that event like that, especially the 20X,
mm-hmm.
is they were, you know, that's the purpose of it. You're being, you know, you're being put in a basically no win, chaotic
yes, right.
Situation, and then learning how to not just survive it, but ideally thrive in that
right.
situation.
Keep moving forward, yeah.
And you see how you know, I mean, you know, we've been fortunate here, you know, very supportive group at the gym to be able to keep us going during this time, but it's, you know, some people. I mean, if you look at even like. The response, you know, I kind of joke about it. It's really not funny, but it's you know, like people hoarding like toilet paper and stuff like that. That's a, you know, I would say that's not thriving.
Right, exactly. There, yeah, you know, you're listening to the fear wolf, and you're trying to keep everything for yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you know, instead of you know taking one day at a time and one step at a time.
Yeah.
And evaluating, you know. They're worried about something, you know, they're hoarding, like, again, like, say, toilet paper, you know, you got 48 rolls of toilet paper in your house, you know, and so you're good for 6 months. So you're planning for 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
That may not even happen.
Right, right.
You know, literally, you know, I mean, the world might end tomorrow,
yep.
you know, and so, but you're worried about 6 months from now.
Yeah.
Instead of just taking care of here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And not, you know, and you're people not acting rationally or logically.
Sure.
You know, they're just reacting on emotion.
Emotion, yeah.
And, you know, that can get stirred up. And I think some, you know, I mean, I'm not bashing, well, I'm kind of bashing. So, like the media, you know, is really good about that.
They want to fan the panic.
Because that keeps people watching
and that
sort
clicks
of thing.
On the computer.
And if you're not, you know, if you're not aware of that,
right.
you can get sucked into that big time and create that chaos for yourself.
I think it's super important for people to have a crucible like that, you know, periodically, you know, every every, you know, few years to do something, you know, really, really hard. Because what it does is, you know, like 20X for us, and you've done 20X and Kokora, you know, you did them both, you know, well, you've been in it where it's, you're about to die. You know, you think, man, you know, you're out there in California, man, in the Pacific Ocean, man, doing, you know, flutter kicks and the waves hitting you and stuff. And, you know, if you can get through that, then all this other little crap, even this COVID stuff, you know, go to the grocery store and somebody's complaining that they're, you know, that their coffee isn't hot enough or, and you're like, what the hell? It almost, you know, it's like, really, you know, you're complaining about that, you know, so this is nothing, you know, and so it kind of puts things in perspective, so it makes things, it's like I tell my kids sometimes, you know, you want stuff that challenges you, okay, really fit, you know, really physical and mental, because that's what the 20X, a 24-hour walk, that stuff, you know, it's going to be physical and it's going to be mental, and so that when, because, I mean, life is going to suck, okay? Life is going to, you know, if you live here on this planet and say, you know, God hope, you know, me and you both are, you know, we're around 120 years old, you know, we're still here lifting weights, you know? And so, but if you live on this planet long enough, man, life is going to suck. It's going to come times where, you know, it's going to go through stretches, you know, that, and, you know, what do you do when that happens? If you've never been tested, if you've always had life handed to you and everything's been easy and mom and daddy's taking care of you and nothing's ever, you know, when the doctor comes in and tells you you've got cancer, you know, what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to handle that? You know, or you know, maybe your wife, you know, you come home and your wife's packed all her stuff and she's gone. None of that's happened to me, by the way. I've got a great wife. You know? But I'm saying, you know, but life can happen. And man, life will throw, you know, and so if you never challenge yourself and you never test yourself, you never put, that's why martial arts is so great, you know. We talk about this, how we think, you know, we believe that, you know, they should do this in schools.
Yeah.
You know, some form of martial arts, whether, you know, it's, you know, jiu-jitsu, karate, wrestling, you know, boxing, you know. Parents don't want to see their kids get punched in the face, but boxing, you know, mm-hmm. you get gloves and headgear on, you'll be okay. You know, but you are testing, you know, no one's going to say stop. No one's going to say time, you know, you got to fight for 3 minutes, you know, and it's just you and the other person, you know. That's something, you know, again, about martial arts, you know, versus team sports. In a team sport aspect, you've got, I think maybe Russell was, I can't remember who.
Yeah.
Russell was talking about this. You know, you got, not only will your teammate might throw you under the bus and say, it wasn't me, it was you. You know, like, I hope that don't happen in teams. You know, that's, you know, you've got a team. But also you got somebody to help take up the slack. Maybe you missed your assignment, but your teammate kind of helped out a little bit. Well, it's on a jiu-jitsu mat.
Yeah.
There ain't nobody else but you, man. Yeah. You know, when you're standing there kickboxing, man, there ain't nobody. It's all on you.
Yeah.
And so it's a little different.
Yeah.
A little different. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you hit something there too, is like, and somebody said this recently, I was listening to, might have been Brian Johnson but he's quoting a book, but it's basically that either, you know, you can choose to kind of train for that,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, which is really what we're doing with the, you know, the 20X event. Was really, you're training for chaos. Like, you know it's coming.
Right.
And you prepare for it.
Right.
And you try to learn. That's one of the things I love. It's just not a beat down. It's
right.
You're learning lessons
right.
as you go, which I think is critical, you know, because anybody can throw together just a crazy beat down workout, but are you learning from it?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everybody, you know, when we did that, everybody learned from that
mm-hmm.
process. But, or you can wait for something, like you said, to happen in life and
then
try
you're forced
to adapt
to
it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I feel like, you know, again, to kind of use some of Mark's language, like dirt diving,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can prepare in your mind ahead of time. And if you've already been through that experience on some level,
mm-hmm.
okay, you can be better prepared.
Sure.
You know, versus just kind of waiting for it to hit
mm-hmm.
the fan, so to speak, and then you don't have any skills.
Yeah.
You know, skills to deal with it. So,
right.
You know, and we, you know, we're both big fans of the breath work,
mm-hmm.
and that's a skill, and that doesn't require
No, a beat down. Or
a beat down. No. That's just something you can work on every day. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have any equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing, you know, breath work, because it can tremendously.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many benefits. It's not even.
I know. Yeah, the box breathing, man, that, you know, and Mark's got that app, you know, so that you can use the app, and I've gotten where, you know, and so when you start, a 5-second box is basically where everybody starts, you know, and some people have a hard time with that.
Yep.
You know, but I think it's, you know, talking about using the breath work practice to help train some of that, you know, if you get to a place where you're on the borderline of not making it around the square. For me, it's like, you know, 8 to 10 seconds, depending on what day it is and how much I've practiced recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to a 9-second box where you inhale for 9 seconds, you exhale for 9 seconds. When you exhale all the air out of your lungs and you try to hold that for 9 seconds, 9 to 10 seconds, especially if you're in a sauna and your heart rate's up a little bit, you are begging to breathe. Okay, but time that thing gives you the cue to take your next inhale. And so you're waiting on it, you're trying to fight it, okay? You don't want to take the breath too fast, you know? So, and then it gives you that cue, and so you start to inhale. And then this is where, for me, it's interesting. You have to fight the panic to breathe fast.
Yep.
Because if you breathe too fast, you're going to have your lungs full of air before the 9 seconds is up. So you have to force yourself, you have to fight the panic and force yourself to breathe slowly for the 9 seconds. Man, that's hard.
Yeah.
That is hard. And, yeah, it's just, it's an interesting mind exercise.
Yeah.
It's totally,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Versus, you know, a 5-second box. 5-second box, you know, is you know, if you're calm, man, for me, it's because I had the practice, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. But some people, like I said,
have a hard time with.
So we even kind of break that down. And like recently, you know, say within the last, you know, 6 months, years, you know, just try to take an inhale, exhale. If you can make the exhale twice as long. Even if it's 1 second inhale and two second
exhale. Right.
That's still stimulating more of that parasympathetic
response,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see, you know, the same thing, like in the workshop this weekend, you know, for those that, it's not mandatory, but we'll have opportunity to do like the ice bath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was, when I first, it wasn't even an ice bath really, but the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
When I first really got exposed to that, you know, we were taught the breath and all that, but it did not really resonate with me because I was just basically in chaos.
Yeah.
You know, you're just trying to, looking back, I was just trying to
survive.
And I was, you know, we got very, very cold. And, but since we've been using the ice bath here, I realized that what for most people it elicits is, like you said, that panic.
Panic
the same thing as like having your breath up.
Okay.
And so, but then to see people be able to calm down,
mm-hmm.
it's just such a switch turns on, you know? And you can see them from panic mode to calm within a few seconds. And it's just purely by, you know, and then the goal with us when we do that is, you know, you can use it as a practice, but also if you just do it one time to make that connection.
And it's just the breathing.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that's changed. They're sitting in a tub of ice.
The ice
didn't get any warmer. No, so it's just the breath. Yeah, exactly.
And I went through that thing, you know, for me, when I last year, that was last year when I did the XPT course. Swimming is not my forte.
Right.
And going underwater,
mm-hmm.
same thing. They were giving us challenges in this, but so now you're holding your breath,
mm-hmm.
but you're underwater.
Right.
And then your brain is saying, I need to come up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really looking back, you know, same thing. I was allowing the panic because
mm-hmm.
I had a distance to cover.
Sure.
You know, like I'm not going to make it and I've got to bring, so then the same thing with training. Now that's something you don't want to do on your own.
Right. Yeah.
Because
right,
if
you drown,
happen to go too far,
right.
You want to have somebody
there
that
can
help you. So, so for those listening,
don't
practice
do that. Don't practice
unless
that
you have a swim buddy.
Swim
for
buddy,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Preferably one that knows
how to CPR and how to swim.
But it's interesting. Don't practice underwater breath holds on your own.
No, don't do that.
Cool. I want to bring up, I know we could talk all day. I want to bring up one thing because I know this is, you know, you're very passionate about, you know, from a self-defense standpoint, but also we've been working recently with law enforcement a little bit. It's kind of our one way of us trying to give back to the community and help those guys, because really, you know, they don't get a lot of training them, like in a hand-to-hand situation. Right. But also, you know, we're trying to work with, on, you know, on that stress response as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, I think, right now, and you know, they're getting kind of bashed by everybody. Not right. everybody, but I'm saying it's been kind of tough, and it's, you know, obviously in every, you know, group of people, there's going to be, you know, unfortunately, you know, people that aren't good, but mm-hmm. these guys we've met have been, have a, you know, they're trying to do the right thing, and then they come in here and we're working with them. So, you know, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah,
your perspective,
you know,
on that?
You know, I have family members that are police officers, and, you know, a good friend of mine, his dad's actually my pastor. He's a police officer. And, you know, you want these guys, you know, you want people to be safe in their job and to be able to perform their duties, you know, like they're supposed to. And, you know, I didn't realize this until we started working with these guys over last month, but, you know, that they get 300, three hours of training a year to cover everything they do. You know, from the I guess the shooting part of it, you know, as far as, you know, drawing their weapon and shooting and you know, how to handcuff people and how to restrain people, 3 hours a year. And that blew my mind. You know, I knew it was a little bit, you know, but I had no idea it was that little. And then, you know, who, you know, I don't want to, you know, bash their training, but, you know, I don't know who's teaching them what they're teaching them, you know. I've seen some videos, you know, that's going on and stuff has happened over the last few months, and I've some of that stuff I've watched, I'm like, you know, that should not have happened. You know, you get two guys on one, you know, and they can't restrain somebody and hold, you know, be able to hold him down and use the stuff that, you know, you jiu-jitsu guys know, to be able to restrain somebody, and then when people get away and they steal their guns, and, you know, then all this bad stuff happens, and so we've talked about that kind of stuff. You know, you will not rise to the level of your expectations. You will fall to the level of your training, and when you only train 3 hours a year, you ain't getting no training.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to offer, you know, free to any law enforcement, you know, people in the area to be able to come here on Saturday mornings. You know, I think it's the second and third Saturdays of the month, to where we can work on how to restrain people in a safe manner. And because man, I know, you know, I have done a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and so really I'm the perfect guinea pig, because I know a little bit, but I don't know a lot, okay? And so then, therefore, I can be a good bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay, whereas, like, you know, if you try to put Hoffa in some of these holes, you know, he's a high-level jiu-jitsu practitioner where he's going to know the counter to some of this stuff, you know, where, you know, he's thinking, you know, Hoffa's such a, I mean, he's a chess master.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, if some of these guys try to put that move on him, he's already thinking five steps ahead. And so he's already ahead of the game, where I'm not.
Right.
And so, but to give these officers an ability to, you know, use these maneuvers. And I'm telling you, man, when they get it on you like you're supposed to, you ain't going nowhere. There's always the outliers of the person who's on, you know, high on, you know, PCP or some kind of drug, and they don't feel pain, or, you know, mentally unstable person who maybe, you know, don't feel the pain don't register, but a normal person, man, you get some of these positions on me, you know, and you're not going anywhere, especially if there's two of you. You got two full-grown officers on top of you, man, and, you know, they got you, you know. So we wanted to offer that the opportunity for these guys to come in, you know, monthly and do some of this, you know, get some training, get some extra training in involved, where, because if you're not trained, you know, we're talking about going back to work, you know, when the shit hits the fan and the chaos happens, how do you handle that? Well, you know, you get, you know, when it escalates, you get scared.
Yeah, you have less options.
You have less options. You don't know what to do other than go for the end all option is your gun. And, you know, and these guys don't want to shoot nobody. I mean, maybe there's some of them, you know, we're talking about the bad apples that you have everywhere, you know. But, man, I can't even, you know, fathom somebody going, yeah, I go out every day looking to shoot somebody. Yeah. I can't see that, you know. So they want to do their job and go home to their family, mm-hmm. you know, as safely as possible. And so giving these guys the opportunity to train and learn how to, you know, apprehend people and in a safe manner is what the goal is. Yeah. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. So I want to finish up with one little piece here.
Okay. Billy's grinning at me.
you mentioned something to me last week. I forget. I think you got it from, who'd you get it from? You remember what it was, but basically I won't say like necessarily your philosophy for life, but we're talking about, I think there's like three things. Like if you, you know, like, to train to be ready for him.
Oh yeah, that was Pat McNamara.
Okay.
Pat, if you, you know, if you anybody there listening, man, that? Yeah, hey, listen to me. If you don't follow Pat on Instagram and social media, you need to follow Pat McNamara. He was Delta Force back in the '80s, I guess, '80s and '90s. You know, why do people work out and why do you train and stuff? And you know, there's many reasons, you know, like if you ask my wife, she just wants to look good, you know, in a bathing suit, you know, and so, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, but Pat has, and I hope I get these right, but he has four reasons why, you know, people should work out. And the first reason, you know, is just to prolong your life and to live healthy, you know, and have good, you know, good health. And, then, so that's the number one reason. The number two reason is, can you save your own life? And so, you know, meaning that, you know, if you're driving down the road and, you know, you have a wreck and you flip your car upside down and you maybe you got a broke leg and the car's on fire, can you pull yourself out of your car? Are you strong enough to really do a pull-up? You know, even if you're on the ground, maybe are you strong enough? Second reason, you know, third reason, you know, can you save somebody else's life? You know, so let's say you're in that same car wreck, okay, and you're okay, but your person in the passenger seat, they're unconscious. Can you drag them to safety? You know, can you lower yourself out of a burning building? You know, stuff like that, or lower them out of a burning building. And then, of course, the fourth reason is that some people need their ass beat. And so you may run into a situation where, you know, someone just need to get throat punched and you need to be able to do that. And so those are kind of, you know, my four reasons why I work out. And so
That's an interesting perspective, because I mean, you know, that can, like I said, it's no judgment on it. You know, people have many different reasons. Mm-hmm. But again, I think going back to contemplation is a big thing. Is like, I question people all the time. You know, it's so, you know, working out, I like to refer to it as training, mm-hmm. because, you know, anybody can work out, but What are you training for?
Sure.
You know, and I ask people all the time, why? Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's a lot worse things to have a habit about, mm-hmm. you know, than just training or working out. But I'm always like, you know, why are you doing it? Right. And knowing why.
Sure.
You know, and like I said, if it's just for, you know, I just want to look better, feel better. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem.
Nope.
You can also kind of think about that in different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And then, is my training supporting that?
Whatever
my reason is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I've found people, you know, they'll tell me if I sit down and ask them why, you know, they may even be pretty confident. They put some thought into it and they know that. But then when we actually evaluate what they're doing, it has no connection.
No connection,
Two different things.
Right, yeah.
You know, and even with us, we kind of made some distinctions. Like I tell people, like when, you know, we talked a lot about like the 20X and Concord and the 24-hour walk, you know, none of those events, I will tell people, were for my health and longevity.
None.
You know, they were for training for something different.
Man, especially 20X, you know, yeah. And Concord, man, in 20X, I was jacked up for a week.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't. It was hard to move for a week, and so that's not healthy.
Yeah, so, and that's what I say. You know, you pick those things
for a different reason,
and you do them not frequently.
No, right, exactly.
You're not going to do a crucible event every weekend. If you're interested in longevity,
right.
If you don't care about longevity,
sure, right. Yeah, exactly.
That could be okay too.
Right.
So
you know, when people, I mean, you think about what I said a while ago about rising to the level of your expectations. Man, people, a lot of people think they could, you know, throat punch somebody. You know, you hear a lot of, but if you don't train that, you're not going to be able to do that. You might get lucky.
Yep.
And then you're just basing it on luck. You know, and I don't want to be lucky. Yep. You know, if I had to,
right.
If it comes
right.
down to where that situation is going to happen, you know, man, that's scary.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and you know, saving somebody, you know, saving, you know, goodness, what happens? You wake up in the middle of the night and your house on fire.
Yeah.
And you got to get your wife out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, whatever, you know, pick her up,
yeah.
and carry her.
Yeah.
Well, if you ain't strong enough,
yeah.
you got a problem.
Well, I think you used another word the other day too, which I think Laird Hamilton talked about it when I did the XPT course. Is don't be a liability,
right?
You
yeah.
know, and you know, for me, like mobility, I realized was a liability, not just for me, but for, you know, when we did the we jumped out of a perfectly good airplane.
yeah. Whose birthday was that?
It wasn't a birthday. It was just Walker wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Me and him, McKenzie did it, but you know, people, were you scared? You know, the biggest fear I had two fears. One was, could I squat down low enough to get out of the plane?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then number two was, can I get my legs up high enough so I
can go okay, <man. laughs>
I was in between. I could care less.
But
I need to work on that.
Yeah. That's funny, man. That's funny.
So anyway, so yeah. All right, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll try to do this again another time. We've always got plenty to talk about.
Sure.
So appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.